So we entered today with 14 record closes on the S&P 500. By the way, the NASDAQ joined the club yesterday. So looking at the last 30 years, it's really, look at that chart. It's not unreasonable to think that maybe this could be the beginning of something big, perhaps dozens of days of record closes. Today, for sure, looks like another one. But there are those out there that say the market feels stretched and investors are giddy. Here's the cover right now. This is the magazine that came out today. The Economist saying that a golden age for stock markets is drawing to a close. Now, I got to be honest, my initial take upon seeing this cover, and I saw it last night, was that it was probably a good contrarian indicator. But I do have to admit, a similar cover back in February of 2020 proved to be pretty prescient. In fact, it provides, well, you could actually say it provides fodder for both long-term investors and short-term traders. Now, remember, the market took a huge turn for the worse, lurched into a horrific free fall. It took many, many, many years for stocks to bounce back. Some still haven't, and a whole lot just completely vanished. Now, for the investor, this line for me really stands out. The increase in the firms combined, this is from the 2000 article. The increase in these firms, their combined value is $2 trillion. It's hard to get your head around. It's roughly equivalent to Germany's entire stock market, four of the five, Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft, worth over $1 trillion each. Facebook, a mere $620 billion. Now, remember, that was 2000, rather. Those five horsemen now, look at this number, almost $11 trillion. If they couldn't get their minds around it back then, what about now? Of course, the average holding period for stocks back then was a little bit more than a year. Now it's just around 5 months. So a lot of people are not participating. They held those stocks, they blinked, they sold, and they really wish they hadn't. Remember, though, back when only wealthy folks owned stocks, the holding period was like 6 years, 7 years. You know, they just put the stocks away. Now, I think one of the reasons for that is that there's just so much more skittishness and so many more knee-jerk reactions. It's the abundance of information. It's always been there, but you can get it at a fingertip, right? I mean, this morning alone, look at this. We got the final read on consumer sentiment. By the way, a gargantuan miss, big-time miss. Then there was the ISM PMI numbers, right? Manufacturing saw a decline, 47.8 from 49.5. Of course, that missed Wall Street consensus. Huge declines in new orders and employment. Now, prices are still still expanding. That's a horrible combination. Then construction spending, right? Remember, we're in this sort of age of construction spending. January saw a decline. You got to look at the corner there, that little blue minus two tenths. The street thought it was going to be up 3/10. Now, with this environment, how can anyone really figure out what's going on anymore? Well, one of the guys who's the best at it joins us right now, Bianco Research President Jim Bianco. And Jim, the street's just bubbling over with excitement, right? How strong this economy, the economy is feeling strong like bull, right? But someone should let Main Street know, because I see a complete disconnect. Your thoughts?
Yeah, there is a bit of a disconnect, because as the economy stays strong, and by the way, I think that's narrowly focused. I think it's, you know, 10% of the population owns 50% of the assets, that's stocks, bonds, and real estate. And they're doing well, and they're spending, and that's giving you big numbers for GDP and the economy. But most people are not in the top 10% by definition. And they're really struggling with higher inflation, fears of more inflation, and higher interest rates as well, too. And that's where that disconnect comes from. And while everybody in that top 10% thinks, yes, the economy could keep going, what could stop it? I fear it's the oldest story in finance, right? It's what could stop it is higher interest rate. And if they just continue to move up and up, right, and there is no Fed rate cut or maybe just one, that provides big competition for stocks, and then they're going to have to reassess.
So what do you make of this cover now, this cover and the cover and the timing of this Economist issue?
You know, it's one of the weirder ones, because if you looked at the cover, you would have said, like, I agreed with you. It looked contrarian that they were being very bullish and, maybe we're hitting a top. But you read the story, and it was anything but that. And so it was a very confusing thing. I mean, the story brought up some very good points about some of the valuation issues that we've got in the stock market. We're paying a lot of, you're paying up for these stocks. They're not cheap. But right now, I think it really does go to the point that everybody's focused on what's happening in the stock market. And it is kind of like the national pastime.
Right. So with that in mind, I mean, honestly, if you are an investor in the market, don't you just have to ride this until the wheels come off?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you are an investor, you got to keep in mind a couple of things. One, the market's going up and you do want to ride it. Momentum is a strong thing, but you do have somewhat of an alternative, What should you expect the stock market to do? What should you expect? About 8% a year. Some years more, some years less. And we've seen that in the last couple of years. Well, if you could get 5.3 in a money market fund, that's, and a money market fund gives you a $1 NAV, I mean, its price never changes. That's most of the stock market without much risk.
Right.
So that's an alternative, but I wouldn't make that 100% of the alternative. You would put some of your money in the stock market too with this momentum.
Jim, let me switch gears. We've got the CEO of Grayscale coming on later. You know, obviously Bitcoin has been on fire. You made interesting comments. I think it was yesterday or the day before. On the centralization of ownership of Bitcoin falling into the hands of a few. And I just want to remind the audience, right, a lot of people are fans of Bitcoin, particularly blockchain, and some of the known benefits, right, that provides a trustless environment. You don't have to do the checks and balances. You got data reconciliation, reduces points of weakness, and optimizes resource distribution. So to what degree is the value beginning maybe to erode, the value proposition beginning to erode?
I mean, I think that's a real risk, that as you centralize the ownership, remember the whole idea, as you pointed out, is that this blockchain runs by itself. No one can put dominion over it. The government can't, bad actors can't. That's if it's running properly. And therefore, it provides a safe environment for anybody to hold their digital assets. But when you start getting it centralized by having ownership like through an ETF, and others, you're allowing powerful actors to maybe have the ability to start dictating terms among the digital assets and maybe the blockchain itself. And that is always a concern because it defeats the major selling proposition of these cryptocurrencies in the first place, that they are decentralized and no one can control them.
Great stuff. Jim, always a pleasure and always an honor to have you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, folks, my next guest says,